Greenside, the IGA podcast.
Also, Mike McCoy, the 2013 U.S.
Zach Johnson, now a two-time major champion after becoming the winner of the 144th Open Championship.
Welcome to Greenside, the IGA podcast. Clint Brown here with you. Hopefully everybody had a safe and happy holidays and New Year. Good thing is we're one step closer to golf season. So anyway, had the opportunity to sit down with Chad Pitts and special guest Jock Olson, Iowa Golf Hall of Famer, before the holidays, and hope you enjoy this conversation.
Special guest Jock Olson with us today, Iowa Golf Hall of Fame 2007 inductee. Jock, first of all, thanks for joining us.
You bet. Great to be with you. I'm in sunny Arizona and talking to you in Iowa. I think I'm glad I'm here.
Yeah, that's what you said when we were emailing kind of back and forth. You said you were down in southern Arizona. So yeah, that sounds like the good place to be.
Yep. I'm glad to be here, but I miss Iowa. I miss Minnesota, but I'll be back in the summer.
Well, Jock, before we kind of kick off here, why don't you give us a little introduction of kind of who you are and kind of how you, maybe you got started in the golf business.
All right. Well, I was born in Marshalltown, Iowa, and I grew up, my first 10 or 11 years at Elmwood Country Club. And my parents were avid golfers. My dad was a school teacher, and he worked the school months, of course, as a music instructor. And then he had his summers off June, July, and August, and he played a lot of golf. And when he could during the school year, he'd play after school and practice. And my mom became very avid. I had two older brothers, so we had a nice fivesome when we could, or foursome at least. And went up and down the nine-hole hills of Elmwood Country Club. And one of my favorite people in the world of golf, Joe August, was someone that I really looked up to. And when I was a young boy, I told my parents I want to be like Joe. So I was very fortunate. I caddied at Elmwood. I shagged balls for Joe's lessons. I was in his junior golf program. And so I was just surrounded by golf at a very early age. And went to college at Southern Illinois University to play golf, and did not go professionally as far as tour golf, but I knew club professional was a good avenue for me. And we had some connections around the state because my dad was a good player and he knew Joe Brown. And my first job in the golf professional business was an assistant professional at Des Moines Golf and Country Club for 2 years under Joe Brown and 1 year under a pro named Roger Padgett. And so that was my start. And then my first head pro job was Burlington Golf Club in Burlington, Iowa, where I stayed for 7 years. And then I went to Cedar Rapids Country Club, where, believe it or not, I used to lay the Des Moines Register newspaper on the front step as a young boy. And then to become head professional there was pretty amazing path for me. And I was there 11 years before I took the head professional job at Interlochen Country Club in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which is, I think, ranked number 56 in the United States now as far as golf courses. And it was a great place to end my career. And I've been in the soft business since I retired at Interlochen. And I'm in the software business relating to golf. So that's where I am today. And it's been a nice ride, guys. Very nice.
And Jock, just to, is it four tees or four reservations that you're with, correct?
It's four tees.
Four tees, yep.
Yeah.
And that's been, I just explain that really quick, because I bet a lot of people don't, you know, totally know what that is.
Right. Four tees was started by a gentleman named Bob Parisi, or you can say Parisi, like the hockey player, but Bob started it at Delwood Hills Country Club. It's now called just Delwood Country Club in St. Paul, Minnesota, with his pro there named Jay Norman. And he had some time in the summer because he had a consulting company in the IT business. And he thought it was kind of a pain to call the golf shop in the mornings to try to get a tee time. And so he thought, well, why don't we do a software program for a private club? And if it works well, we'll go out and sell it around the state and the country. And he was very successful because at that time, this was about 2001, 2002, most online tee times were public golf courses and not many privates, because I think we all know that Interlochen is different from Cedar Rapids Country Club, is different from Hazeltine, is different from Des Moines Golf. So what you have to do is you have to have a platform of that software that will let you customize it to each private club, depending on their rules and regulations of play, men's golf, women's golf, junior golf, guest days, all that type of thing. So he did a great job doing it. Delwood was number one. When I was at Interlochen as the head pro, we were about club number three. And now he's got well over 600 private clubs across the country, many in Iowa, a lot in Minnesota, Arizona, California, Northeast. That use our product, and that's where it came from. And I was kind of associated with Bob early just because I was in the Twin Cities, and I helped open some doors to golf shops so that 4T's salespeople could show our product. And fortunately, we've been very successful, and we'll be 20 years old next April. So that's kind of where 4T's is.
Yeah, it's funny, and you started to explain that a little bit, and we obviously have some experience with 4T's because it integrates with Gin Handicap System in a lot of places and things like that. But you kind of think, okay, an online tee time system, well, why couldn't it be the same for every private club? And then you start to explain the stuff that you said about the, you know, men's day or women's day or various times when certain people may or may not be allowed to make a tee time or events they might have going on. And yeah, all of a sudden you realize, yeah, it probably does have to be customized quite a bit depending on the club you're at.
Yeah. And what's really nice about it is it kept people from making a tee time in the wrong time of day. And so as opposed to the shop telling them, hey, you can't play, the software would tell them that they weren't allowed to play at that time of the day if you were a male golfer. So it really saved a lot of phone calls, a lot of confusion, and really helps clubs with their rules and regulations. The software kind of polices it a little bit for them. So yeah, it's been great. It's very user-friendly for the members and just as importantly for the staff that use 4T's. So it's been great.
Well, I know Clint wants to probably maybe go back to the beginning. So I just, it was cool to see kind of where you're at now in your, yeah, in your career and obviously enjoying things down in Arizona.
Yeah, I'm about a 45-year member of the PGA of America. So I've been around it a while and I've been very, very lucky. I always say I just was in the right place at the right time. So, but Joe Brown gave me the start and here I am today, still involved, which is great.
Jock, like you said, Joe Brown and Joe August, very, you know, very influential for you and in your career. You know, a couple names that I think a lot of people have heard, but maybe don't know about. So can you maybe tell us a little bit about both of those guys and maybe some memories you have of them?
Yeah, well, you know, Joe August, what I remember so much is he was just a golf professional for everybody, whether it was a guest that came to Elmwood or whether it was the members. He would greet people on the ninth green, and you played, you know, for an 18-hole golfer, you played twice. So you might see Joe twice on nine green at the end of your round. And he was just so personable. I watched him teach. Of course, I shagged his golf balls for him because we didn't have a real driving range. We had to use shag bags. And then I was in his junior golf program. And just everything Joe did was, you know, was with great vigor and personality. And Joe was actually a vice president of the PGA of America. And at that time, a vice president was classified as someone that was on the national board. Now, kind of following in Joe's footsteps from 1991 to 1993, I was also on the national board, but I was called a national board member. They had taken the title of vice president away from the board members. So, obviously, between teaching, between trying to be a very outgoing golf professional with my members through the years as a head professional, and serving the PGA of America both at the section level in Iowa and Minnesota, and now I'm getting involved here in the Southwest PGA, I was just pretty much following in Joe's footsteps. So I'm very proud of that. I was in school with Joe's son, John August, who might still be in the Marshalltown area, I would guess. And then Joe Brown, boy, what a piece of work he was. He was a very, very excellent player, played some tour events, played with some great professionals such as, I believe, Sam Snead and the like. He could really play. And he was a great teacher. I tried to watch him teach as much as I could to learn besides what I was learning from PGA educational programs. And Joe was a good merchandiser and a real fun guy. He hung out a lot with the members, both in the clubhouse and, of course, in the shop and out on the golf course. Joe played quite a bit, which members loved. And, so I got some really good background. And then, Joe retired and I stayed one more year at Des Moines Golf. So between the two Joes, and they were very, very close friends. I know Joe August and Joe Brown every winter would head for Florida to play in the PGA Club professional events. And they were super. So I guess I wanted to be like both Joes as far as that goes. So they were great people, great golf professionals. And I'm honored to be in the Iowa Golf Hall of Fame with both of them. So.
Yeah, I meant to mention, you know, obviously both of those are Iowa Golf Hall of Famers. So guys, you obviously looked up to, but it was just curious on kind of what they had meant to you. We'll get to Interlochen here in a second, Jock, but can you just talk to me kind of about your early days at the three clubs there in Iowa? I mean, three, you know, still great courses and that kind of thing. Just kind of curious on what you remember for those early days of your, you know, kind of early professional career.
Yeah, you know, Des Moines Golf, when I played it as a youngster, probably some junior golf things, it was the old course. But as an assistant pro, they were at the new course. And the trees were small, and the wind would blow. And we had 1,000 golf bags in the bag storage room because it was a 36-hole facility. And Des Moines being the size of the city it is, with all the people that wanted to belong to a private club, it was very, very busy. I can remember nights when my wife and I, Sherry, had one car, she'd come pick me up after work. And I could be sitting downstairs with the bagroom staff and we were washing the clubs after a shotgun on 118 and people coming off the other 18, just playing, you know, late golf. And we spent a lot of long days. We worked 6 days a week and had one day off. And that's when as assistant pros, we'd all get together in the Des Moines area and we'd play 36 holes because otherwise, we're going to be working Tuesday through Sunday. So that was a great experience. A lot of members I got to know, still know some from Des Moines Golf. And then my first head pro job, I hadn't gotten my PGA card yet. It was 1976 when Burlington Golf Club hired me. And I didn't know much about it, but it was a good starting point for me. You know, just a, you know, I think sometimes around the state, we would call it one of the best kept secrets, Iowa golf courses. And eventually, as you all know, we had some state amateurs there and I believe women's state amateurs and husband, wife, very challenging, very different from Des Moines Golf. But a great place for Sherry and I to get our start running a golf shop business because we own the golf shop there. I did 95% of the teaching. The golf driving range was out right outside my golf shop door. And I learned a lot about what it meant to be a head golf professional and what was expected of you. And it was very laid back. The members were very kind. We had a lot of private golf carts. We had 15 club owned golf carts. It was a great starting point. And let's see, I think it was 7 years there because it was 11 at Cedar Rapids Country Club. So that was a great place to be, still very close to a lot of those members. And, but when I, you know, I didn't expect David Shackelford to be leaving Cedar Rapids Country Club when he did, but when that job opened up, obviously I had a lot of connections in Cedar Rapids since my parents had moved us from Marshalltown to Cedar Rapids, and I believe it was 1961. And so we knew a lot of people as Dad was playing golf around the city with Cedar Rapids Country Club members and other people that were prominent golfers. And so I had a little bit in there. Of course, Joe Brown was well known in Cedar Rapids and interviewed for the position and was very fortunate to have gotten that. It was a very good 11 years at Cedar Rapids Country Club, a great Donald Ross golf course. Great membership, taught a lot there as well, and started teaching with an international golf school for 20 years. I think I started that late in Burlington. And so Cedar Rapids, I was busy in the summer, but in the winters I'd sneak away and do some teaching with the golf schools across the U.S. and just one stint in Hawaii, which was nice. So, you know, Cedar Rapids, I still call home, even though I was born in Marshalltown. But fortunately, I'm an honorary member there. And whenever I can, I go back and play and see a lot of people that I got to know in those 11 years. So that was my starting points in Iowa, and it was very good to me for sure.
So, Jock, you mentioned Cedar Rapids Country Club and maybe getting back there to play a little bit, and you also spent a significant amount of time at Elmwood Country Club. Both of those places were affected severely by the derecho storms of the summer of 2020. Have you seen either of those places since those storms in person or played there?
No, I haven't seen Marshalltown, but Sherry and I were driving. We had some reason to be back in Iowa, and we went to the country club, Cedar Rapids, and it was probably a week after the storms, and it was heartbreaking and devastating to see, you know, what happened to those magnificent tree-lined fairways and the buildings. You know, the clubhouse lost quite a bit of their shingles off their roof, and you know, trees uprooted. I mean, huge, beautiful oak trees uprooted. It was a shock. And, you know, where it is today is pretty much unbelievable. They've done a great job recovering. And then just to drive through the city, and it wasn't just, as you all know, one section like Southeast Cedar Rapids or Northeast Cedar Rapids. It started, you know, from the very west side all the way across. And to see all the limbs and trees stacked along the streets to be picked up and cleaned up, and the houses that were shrink wrapped on the roofs, and it did look like a war zone. And fortunately, it wasn't as bad as what we've seen in Kentucky recently, but it was pretty shocking. But you know, just like what happened with the 500-year floods, you know, Cedar Rapids and Iowans recover. And you know, it's a better place today as far as the country club and its layout than it was. Looks a little bit more like Oakmont, because I think many of you probably know Oakmont had a ton of trees, and then they just decided to make it more of a links golf course. But yeah, the derecho was pretty unbelievable. Got a lot of pictures and a lot of memories. And I remember the flooding too. I think I was there in 93 was my last year, and that's when we had the floods, if I'm not mistaken, and people were canoeing down the Indian Creek creek that goes through Cedar Rapids Country.
Oh, sure.
At that time, it was the Indian Creek River. It just kind of took over that lower part of the golf course. So, yeah, that was a very unusual time for sure.
You mentioned that they have done a fantastic job of recovering from the derecho storms, and I know they had, you know, Cedar Rapids kind of had already maybe completed their renovation, and maybe they were, you know, moving on to a little bit of a second phase where they had some plans to do some work, but the derecho frankly changed all of that, and they updated their master plan, and they're in the middle of, you know, like you said, the recovery phase, and they're doing a tremendous job. And then Elmwood had a master plan that did involve the removal of a good amount of trees, but not the amount that they had. And they were going to obviously pick the trees they wanted to remove, and they got picked for them in this case. And they've done a really nice job of kind of taking the vision they initially had and creating a new vision that involved, you know, a bit more tree removal than they had anticipated. And there, it's, if you get a chance to, if you're back in Iowa, you know, check out Elmwood. They've done a nice job of recovering as well. So,
yeah, I've got to do that. My wife's plans and I, this would be our first summer in Arizona in 2022, but we plan to get out of here and travel a lot and come back to Iowa and Minnesota and just areas across the country that we never got to discover in the summer times because, you know, my golf job and Sherry working with me a lot, we couldn't venture out on summer vacation. So we're looking forward to next summer.
Jock, you mentioned the, you know, the head pro at Cedar Rapids Country Club kind of coming back home. Just curious about, you know, the opportunity that presented itself as Interlochen. Was there, you know, what was kind of that thought process like? You know, you kind of came home to, you know, to that job in Cedar Rapids, and then now you're having an opportunity at Interlochen, and just curious about that.
Yeah, it was funny. There was a member at Cedar Rapids Country Club, a couple, and they also had a membership up at Interlochen, and they had come back and knew that the pro there was retiring. As a matter of fact, the story in Interlochen was I was the first new golf pro they hired in 74 years because they had a father and a son that were there for 73 years.
Oh, wow.
So, and I think the main reason that I took a serious look at Interlochen, that it was always on my resume to become the head professional at one of the top golf courses in the United States. And I guess Interlochen pretty much filled that bill. A little bit of the history, if people don't know, is that in 1930, Bobby Jones won the third leg of the Grand Slam at Interlochen. So we have a lot of Bobby Jones history there. And one of their members was a pretty well-known lady player by the name of Patty Berg. Patty Berg and I became very close, and until her death, probably I'd been at Interlochen about 8 years or so, and Patty passed away. But she made several visits to the club, and we became very close. And so that was pretty unique about becoming the golf professional there. And then in 2002, we hosted the Solheim Cup, which the USA won, and Patty Sheehan was the captain. And then I actually, 2 years later, Sherry and I went to Sweden and assisted Patty with the Solheim Cup there. So that was a lot of fun. And then in 2008, because the Solheim Cup was such a success, we were offered in the U.S. Women's Open, which was won by Inbee Park. And it happened to be the last U.S. Open Annika Sorenstam has ever played in. And the really unique thing was the 18th hole. We converted the nines or switched the nines, and 18 was number nine. It's par five. And on her third shot with the six iron, because she had to chip out from the trees, Annika holed it out for an eagle. And I think that was her very last shot in the US Open. So that was pretty exciting for the crowd at the time. So, you know, Interlochen just offered, you know, a time for me to make, you know, maybe a step to that top 100 club. I have a lot of great stories from there. Some super people that would come by and visit and play golf with me as the head pro. And so, it was a great 15 years there. So.
Well, Jock, you mentioned 2002, and if I have my notes right here, you were the National PGA Professional of the Year in 2002. That had to be quite an honor.
Yeah, it sure was. It was a big, big surprise. We were setting up for the Solheim Cup, and there was an accident in our merchandise tent the week before the tournament started, and a fixture actually collapsed and struck me in the shoulder, and thankfully didn't hit me in the head. But I think it was a day or two after that. I didn't have to go to the hospital, but I had to be taken to the clubhouse and taken care of. A little bit of a sore back, and that was it. But a couple of days later, Jack Connelly, the president of the PGA of America, called and told me that I had won that award. And it was pretty surprising. And at the time, after all the preparations we were going through and that minor accident, it was nice news to have. And I was very, very fortunate. You know, there's 28,000 PGA golf professionals and apprentices in the country. So to be chosen, you know, it's kind of one of those like dreams that you wouldn't think would ever happen. But I was, I guess, again, right place, right time. And, you know, it served on the national board and run for a national office of the PGA, which unfortunately at that point I didn't win the election against four other guys. But it was quite an honor for sure.
Jock, what do you say? We'll take a break and we'll catch you next time on Greenside, the IGA podcast.